Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hi, hello, hi. Welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. Y'all, so this is the part where I usually tell you about my life, and I've got something pretty cool to share this time around. So if you are listening to this on the day it drops, then I am officially 1 week away from starting to volunteer my time at Aquarium of Niagara. I don't have any details yet, but yeah, I'm officially going to be volunteering there at an AZA-accredited facility. I am very hopeful that the perspective that I get from this will give me even greater insight that I can bring to the podcast. So this is not only exciting for me, but also for all of y'all who listen, unless it, you know, doesn't, in which case, hey, it'll still be the same great podcast. So, you know, whatever. Obviously, this will all be done around my gigging schedule and travel schedule and all of that stuff. So honestly, I'm just really happy that the aquarium is being so accommodating and will help me out and allow me to get my hands dirty, so to speak. So yeah, that's my big news this week, and I'm really excited about it. And other than that, all I really have to say before we get to the news stuff is just a quick reminder to make sure that you hit subscribe. Make sure that you are following along on all the socials at Rossafari and on TikTok at Rossafari Pod. I've actually started posting on TikTok a little bit again. We'll see how long that lasts. But yeah. And of course, since this is Zoo News, don't forget that you can send me stories. And I'll say your name at the end of the episode, whether I use them or not, which is a pretty sweet deal if I do say so myself. So, yeah, exciting news and good stuff, and yay. And without further ado, let's get to it. All right. So we always start off with our births and then our deaths. And, you know, I've mentioned on here that as I've been kind of reshaping the Zoo News episodes a little bit, I have been doing less of these and trying to hit just kind of the bigger ones with much love to all of the animals that are born or die at zoos. That's a whole lot of animals. But this week, both lists are really long because there was just like a lot of really newsworthy stuff to talk about. So we're going to start off, obviously, with our births, and we're going to start with our friends at Brevard Zoo in Florida, where they have announced the birth of an Eastern Bongo calf, or bonglet. The baby, which was 43 pounds at birth, is a female and is doing well. Bongos are critically endangered, but Brevard Zoo has actually had a lot of success with breeding the species. This is their fourth bongo birth in the last 3 years. I think that's really, really incredible. So yeah, congrats to everyone at Brevard Zoo. Our friends at the Cincinnati Zoo have announced the birth of two little blue penguin chicks that hatched at the end of 2023. Both have been able to get their initial exam and have been deemed healthy and are now back with mom and dad being raised to be, well, I guess bigger little blue penguins. Penglets, like most baby birds, are kind of awkward looking but cute all at once, but I'm sure these two will be beauties when they get a bit older. And if you go to at Cincinnati Zoo, you can see some photos of them. They're actually, honestly, they're cuter than a lot of baby birds are, not gonna lie. The Caldwell Zoo has announced two exciting births, an impala and a kudu. Both of the babies have already been named, and I couldn't love the names more. Apparently, the impala herd at the Caldwell Zoo is named after pastas because impala are native to Italy. Okay, no, they aren't. But they are named after pastas, like I said. And so the new impala is named Risotto, which I just love so much. The kudu also has an adorable name, which is Turkey. Turkey and Risotto are both doing very well, and now I'm hungry, so thanks for that. But hey, congrats to the Caldwell Zoo. And Zoo Miami has announced the birth of two sloth bear cubs to mom Kimati. At first, it looked like she was only going to have one bearlet, as the first one came at 4 a.m., but then around 9:30 in the morning, she gave birth to the second one. 5.5 hours later. That seems crazy to me. But yeah, I'm especially excited about these births, as I have known their mom for years, as she was born at the Philadelphia Zoo and lived there until 2021. Now, Kimati and the father, Hank, are the first sloth bears at the zoo this century, so it is extra exciting to see them giving birth and growing their little family. Yay, Zoo Miami. And of course, that brings us to the flip of the coin, to the deaths. And I guess we have to start this one with the one that hurts me the most this week. The Akron Zoo unexpectedly said goodbye to Penny the Red Panda this week. Penny was one of the stars of the viral Panda Palace series of webisodes back when Akron brought red pandas to the zoo, along with her sisters Lulu and Coco. Penny passed away from idiopathic degenerative myopathy, which is a type of disorder that affects the muscles used for movement and is not really a disease that is very well known or really understood. I think that has to make it, you know, even harder for the team, knowing that it is something that is like a very real disease, but one that we just don't get. And this is just to be clear, this is not just a panda disease, but something that many animals, including humans, can get. Anyway, Penny was awesome, and I'm so grateful for the memories I have of her, both from my visits and from the Panda Palace videos. They were so good. And even though I spent more time with Lulu when I was behind the scenes with the girls for my episode with their keeper, I did have this really great, really sweet moment with Penny that I'll now cherish even more. Just kind of a quiet, private moment. It was nice. She was a good one. Anyway, sending love to the entire team at the Akron Zoo. I cannot imagine what they're all going through right now. And, you know, one thing I love about the Akron Zoo is that really the whole team is always involved there. So, yeah, it's got to be hard for everyone. Sending just all the love. The Los Angeles Zoo has announced the passing of Shanzi, one of the Asian elephants who called the zoo home. Shanzi was 53 at the time of her passing. She was discovered unable to get up in her exhibit by overnight zoo staff, and animal care and veterinary staff were called in and worked through the night to try to help her with her medical issues, but in the end, the decision was made to sedate her and then euthanize her in the early morning hours. Shanzi had a hard early life performing in circuses in Thailand before she moved to the United States in 1983. Now, you know, even though 53 seems like an old age, Asian elephants have a life expectancy around 70 years. So the loss of Shanzi is extra challenging for zoo staff because it just wasn't, you know, really expected. But of course, we know that she was given the absolute best care until her passing. Sending condolences to the team at the Los Angeles Zoo. Seneca Park Zoo has announced the passing of Gretzky, the Canada Lynx. Gretzky started showing sudden severe neurological changes, seeming to be unaware of his surroundings. Upon being anesthetized and given a thorough examination, it was revealed that the cat had a brain disease and a form that would not be able to be medically managed, so the team made the hard decision to humanely euthanize Gretzky, sending condolences to the team. Really got a lot of these this week, y'all. Like, still a lot more coming. The Columbus Zoo has said goodbye to Randall Patrick, an ambassador warthog that could often be seen during the cheetah encounters at the zoo, or even running around in the exhibit space with his friends and fellow warthogs Binti and Zuri. Now, Randall was a delicate soul who preferred Brussels sprouts over grass and came to love hand-woven beds over the standard piles of straw that most warthogs bed down in. Known for his big heart and big stomach, Randall Patrick was a huge personality at the zoo and will be greatly, greatly missed. The Naples Zoo has announced the passing of Cleo, the female African serval who lived there. She has lived at the zoo with her brother Baku since 2014 when they arrived at only a few weeks old. Sadly, Cleo recently developed a urinary tract infection, which led to chronic kidney disease, something that is common in older cats, but can definitely affect younger cats quite easily as well. Sending love and condolences to the team at the Naples Zoo during this tough time. The Henry Dorley Zoo in Omaha, Nebraska, is sad to announce the death of Timu, a 28-year-old female Western Lowland gorilla. When Timu started showing signs of illness, the veterinary team jumped in to try to help, but testing showed that she was in renal failure, which is, you know, kidney failure. The team tried their best to save her, but she passed away while recovering from anesthesia after one of her procedures. Now, Timu may be gone, but her legacy lives on as she was the first, and to date, the only gorilla conceived by in vitro fertilization, earning her the nickname the world's first test tube gorilla. This IVF treatment happened at the Cincinnati Zoo, thanks to the amazing crew team there that y'all have heard a lot about. So sending love to the team at the Henry Dorley Zoo and the team that knew and loved her well at the Cincinnati Zoo. And then last, but certainly not least in deaths this week, the Point Defiance Zoo has announced the passing of Kevin, the last remaining free-roaming peacock at the facility. Kevin was known for his love of goats and taking small bites of waffles, so he may have been the bird spirit of Zoe?
I really like goats. I just really like goats, okay?
And of course, that soundbite was from a TikTok that we have on the Raw Safari page there. And I'm not trying to take away from the sadness of Kevin's death. I just need to add a little levity to this section since there's been so much. But sadly, with the avian influenza issues currently affecting bird populations, the zoo has decided that they will not be getting any more peafowl for the foreseeable future. So not only will Kevin be missed, but the species as a whole will be missed at the zoo as well. Sending love to the team there. And of course, that brings us to our main zoo news section. So we're going to start this by discussing what, you know, exactly what you guys all expected and were waiting to hear about. Labor unrest in Papua New Guinea. That's where a state of emergency has been declared after rioting has broken out in the capital city, which has led to at least 15 deaths so far. Now, along with the deaths, shops and cars were torched and supermarkets were looted. All of this occurred after police went on strike after their paychecks arrived unexpectedly with reduced salaries. Authorities claim the payments were made in error and that the additional monies would be received by the officers, but their strike, combined with rising costs and a high unemployment rate across the island nation, led to all kinds of violence and other, unrest. Civil unrest, I believe, is the term. Now, of course, Papua New Guinea is home to most of the tree kangaroo species in the world and is also home to Port Moresby Nature Park, which is an incredible facility with a tree kangaroo area that is second to none. Due to the current unrest, the park is closed until further notice. I'm guessing most of you that listen aren't going there, but I did want to tell y'all about this, let you know this is happening and happening in a very important place for tree kangaroos. And I also wanted to take a minute to say thank you to all of the keepers who keep going to this park and taking care of their animals, despite the fact that it is currently deemed unsafe for people to go there. And really, I mean, that extends well beyond this one facility. That's what zookeepers do. They go in the elements. They go in scary moments. They give a lot for their animals. And I think this story is a great reminder of that. All right, moving on from that. An organization called Musement, which keeps data on zoos, aquariums, museums, theme parks, national parks, shopping centers, monuments, and other tourist attractions of those types, has recently released a map of the top attended attraction in each state. Some of this is relevant to us, as the Oregon Zoo is the top attraction in Oregon. Oregon? Oregon? Origami? One of those. Other top attractions include the Henry Dorley Zoo in Nebraska, Sedgwick County Zoo in Kansas, Oklahoma City Zoo in Oklahoma, Indianapolis Zoo in Indiana, Georgia Aquarium in Georgia, Mystic Aquarium in Connecticut, the National Aquarium in Maryland, Roger Williams Park Zoo in Rhode Island. And then to add to that list, both Hershey Park and Six Flags Great Adventure were tops in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, respectively, with Zoo America, a small AZA facility that exists at Hershey Park, and a wildlife safari that is ZAA accredited at Six Flags Great Adventure in New Jersey. In total, that means that 9 states have a zoological facility as their top attraction, with 2 more having zoological facilities as part of their top attraction. Pretty impressive. And speaking of impressive things, Beardsley Zoo has announced a really cool program for teens, and I'm suddenly jealous of teenagers in Connecticut. The program is called Zoo Explorers, and it is a year-long education program for high schoolers that provides them with opportunities to learn about the various career paths in a zoo setting. A year-long program that teaches you about the different stuff you can do to work at a zoo. I think that is just incredibly cool. Registration is now open if you happen to know someone in that age group and general area. Okay, now. I know the people at Beardsley know me really well from all the episodes I've done there, but do you think anyone would be suspicious if a teenager with a full beard and a few wisps of gray hair rolled in named, Ron Jossi, asking for a friend? On a more serious note, the Toronto's... Oh, who am I kidding? I am so serious that I would do that if I could get away with it. Anyway, the Toronto Zoo has been having multiple weird attacks on the internet lately. For starters, the zoo experienced a ransomware cyber attack this week. The zoo was quick to alert followers to the attack and also to reassure them that credit card information isn't stored on the system. They also confirmed that animal well-being and support systems were not targeted as part of the attack. They then went on to say that attacks like this are becoming more frequent against the zoo, but that they have taken steps over the last few years to guard against any major issues. Then, just a few days after the cyber attacks, the zoo put out a reminder online that their website is the only authorized seller of tickets to the zoo online. Unofficial Facebook pages and unauthorized retail stores were apparently circulating online, indicating marked down tickets, but these were not real. All of this together makes me wonder if the Toronto Zoo just has its own cyberbully, or if this is the start of the next wave of attacks on zoos from the people who don't think they should exist. When attempts at shaming fail and court cases fail, maybe cyber attacks become the next frontier of an ill-informed war. For now, we will just wait and see, but I know that some of you who listen are in zoo security or in some form of management at your zoo, and I just want to take this moment to encourage you to make sure that your zoo cybersecurity measures are up to date and able to take on issues like this with minimal interference. Because as annoying as this is for the Toronto Zoo, they seem to have, you know, handled it incredibly well. And speaking of things to do with the internet, Zoo Atlanta has been getting questions about La Yun's eyes recently. La Yun is one of the giant pandas that lives at the zoo, and of course, people are constantly vigilant about the panda bears they see online to an obsessive and sometimes abusive extent. It turns out the markings people are seeing on La Yun's eyes are allergies that are causing some alopecia, which is a fancy way of saying hair loss. Now, she is on allergy meds to help combat this condition, which is actually hereditary. It turns out that her mom, Lun Lun, also has mild alopecia around the eyes, though it is far less noticeable and doesn't require any treatment. Of course, I do want to point out that this information was released because of the misinformation being spread about the remaining giant pandas here in the States, just as misinformation campaigns took place when there were pandas at the Memphis Zoo towards the end of their lease and the National Zoo towards the end of their lease. With China indicating that giant pandas will be back in the U.S. in the near future, I'll be curious to see, first, if that happens, and then if these problems continue, or if they are simply some form of Chinese nationalist attack in the hopes of getting all of the pandas back to China at the end of their leases. And just to be super clear, Zoo Atlanta is a wonderfully transparent zoo. Were these cyberbullying tactics not being used, I'm sure they still would have released this information, especially if anyone asked. But I'm incredibly grateful to them for, you know, sharing this information in order to combat misinformation online. And y'all, here's the crazy thing. I mispronounced this bear's name multiple times in that last story, and I can't not mispronounce it. I don't know what's wrong with me. I have done more takes of just saying that name incorrectly. I can't get through the story, and I wanted to share it. So I'm just coming in here after the story to let you know that the panda's name is Ya Lun, not La Yun. Ya Lun. Y-A space L-U-N. I don't know what is wrong with me, but I have been unable to say it. And since I like being transparent with my audience and also letting y'all have some fun, you may laugh at me for that. You're welcome. Mystic Aquarium in Connecticut is offering healthcare workers free admission during the month of January. This includes the employees of hospitals, doctor's offices, veterinary clinics, and more. Be careful if you're a vet, though. They might put you to work. I kid. Actually, all you need to do is show up and show your work ID badge, and you're in. I love this initiative so much. Now, we all recently celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act, and the Maryland Zoo got to celebrate in a particularly unique way. Some of the keepers and staff headed to the White House in order to raise awareness of the amazing conservation work being done at AZA-accredited facilities, and to introduce the people at the White House to some different ambassadors than they are used to meeting. Animal ambassadors! What an amazingly cool opportunity for the awesome people at the zoo that got to experience this. And even more so, frankly, for the incredible people at the White House who got to meet animals, and also some of the most amazing people around. Zoo staff. And last but not least in zoo news this week, there is a mixed species exhibit at Zoo Negara in Malaysia, and it's unlike any other. For a long time, the zoo has had a wonderful capybara exhibit. Now, when people go there to see the world's largest rodents at the zoo, they can see them along with their own pet cat. The cat, named Oyen, was a stray cat that moved into the capybara exhibit during the pandemic, where the capys truly adopted him. There's no other way to put it. Anthropomorphism be darned. They started sharing food with him, cuddling him, letting him wander their exhibit, and just kind of do whatever he wants to and exist with the rest of the cappies. And once the zoo reopened after the initial wave of the pandemic, people noticed and fell in love with Oyen. On some days, attendance has been more than double what would have been expected at pre-pandemic levels, with most of the people coming to see the Cappy Cat Connection. This influx of visitors really helped the zoo recover from the financial losses most zoos faced because of COVID. And now, the zoo has officially welcomed Oyen as part of the exhibit, the signage of which now reads, Capybaras and Oyen. I love it.
Stereotypical animal podcast theme song. Here to bring you to conservation news.
The Cornell Lab of Ornithology has started to promote its annual Great Backyard Bird Count, which will be taking place from February 16th to the 19th. This is a great citizen science project that you can easily be a part of by searching for the Great Backyard Bird Count online. It's an awesome way to get involved in doing some conservation work without having to change your routine too much or, like, you know, hop in a plane to Madagascar or something. So check it out. Project Cheetah, the effort by the Indian government to reintroduce cheetahs to the lands they previously occupied in India, has announced a huge success. Three new cheetah cubs have been born in the wild at Kuno National Park. The parents of whom are two cheetahs who made the journey to India from the Cheetah Conservation Fund in Namibia. This is a huge victory as it shows how well the cheetahs are adapting to their new homes. Congrats to everyone involved, especially our friends at CCF. Now, on a less happy note, I keep talking about avian influenza, or H5N1, on this podcast, and along with discussing all of the effects it is having on both wild and zoo-based bird populations across the country, I have mentioned that it crosses over into mammal populations from time to time. The latest case of this is the discovery of H5N1 in a polar bear carcass that was found in Alaska. Upon necropsy, it was not only discovered that the polar bear had the disease, but that it was officially the cause of the bear's death. The scientists who looked into the situation assumed that the bear was scavenging dead or dying birds on the land and ingested the disease in the process where it crossed over. The crazy thing about H5N1 is that it is incredibly adaptive, more so than any avian influenza we have studied to date. It is not only responsible for the deaths of millions of birds, but it keeps subtly changing as the outbreak travels around, leaving areas and then returning as birds travel to and from infected areas. Given the fact that more mammal species keep being infected with the disease, and that there are already examples of humans being infected, biologists are starting to wonder if the disease is not only here to stay, but also if it will end up mutating and becoming the next pandemic amongst mammals, including humans. Now, I can't stress enough that we are talking about conjecture and nothing more at this point. And also that, so far, the disease has been incredibly mild in the humans that it has managed to infect. Still, this is something to keep track of, not just as it pertains to bird conservation, but also to species like polar bears and apparently possibly even humanity itself. Sorry, I just like being dramatic. A new jaguar has been spotted. Get it? Spotted? Like how jaguars, you know, don't have spots, but people think they do because they don't know the difference between rosettes and spots. Anyway, a new jaguar has been spotted in Arizona. Trail camera images have confirmed that this jaguar is one that has not been observed in the state before. This is only the eighth jaguar to be seen in Arizona in the past three decades, though jaguars did regularly roam the area 150 years ago. Before the discovery of this third jaguar, only two jags have been known to be in the state currently, nicknamed Sombra and El Jefe. Hopefully, the jaguar population continues to grow back in its native land, in Arizona. And then last but not least in conservation news this week, y'all, we have a story that really bugs me. I hate this one. So Norway has become the first country to have their government approve the practice of deep sea mining, which is, well, you're not idiots. It's deep sea mining. And it is exactly as terrible as it sounds. The idea of sending mining equipment to the bottom of the ocean to see what they can dig up, disregarding the incredible biodiversity down there and the effect that, you know, healthy oceans have on the rest of the planet, is just incredibly problematic. I'm actually shocked there aren't international treaties preventing this practice, but I guess it's such a new concept that they just don't exist. Like, there was just no, who would drill into the bottom of the ocean? Blah, stupid. Anyway, I'm sure if Norway sees success, other nations will follow, and then we will do to the bottom of the ocean the same damage we have done to the areas of the land that we mine. So that's exciting for us. I wish I had some optimistic look at this, but like, this is bad, y'all. I really hope that governments are able to step in and fix this, because not good. But hey, I don't like to end on such a downer for each section, so hey, remember, I'm disappointed in this whole situation, but I'm also the guy who couldn't pronounce the name of a giant panda, so like, psh, what do I know?
It's time for other news. It's time for other news. Hey, all right now, then now it's time for other news. Hey, it's a segue to the podcast other news.
All right, so I generally try to keep this section light and funny and maybe occasionally informative. But in this case, though, I have a rough story to share. A young California sea lion was recently discovered paralyzed in Marina del Rey. The paralyzation, which was of her entire lower body, came from a gunshot wound and ended up proving to be fatal. A gunshot wound. Some stupid mother Hull decided to shoot an innocent sea lion. People are so messed up. I report this story not just because it sucks and is worth reporting, but also because police are seeking information related to the shooting. If anyone knows anything about this, and I realize it's a long shot, you can contact the NOAA Office of Law Enforcement. The crime can result in a $100,000 fine and a year in prison, which is not nearly enough, but I hope to heck this person who did this gets it. Okay, and we continue January, which is a month without its own animal month. Now, I have to ask, do y'all appreciate dragons? Because I know I do, which is great because January 16th is Appreciate a Dragon Day, which is your only animal holiday this week. And in case you're wondering, it's talking about the fictional dragons, not Komodos. So we're talking about, like, in Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and How to Train a Dragon and How to Train a Dragon 2 and How to Train a Dragon 3 and How to Train a Dragon the TV series. And I guess I could have just said the How to Train a Dragon franchise, but I didn't, because honestly, I don't know what to do to fill this section in early January when there just aren't enough animal holidays. So I end up playing a quick parody song that is longer than the segment after it, which just seems crazy. So I decide to fill it up by saying 8 different uses of the word dragon, only now it's 9, but that was cheesy because it would have been better to phrase that as I decide to fill it up by saying dragon 8 times, but then I couldn't have added the 9th one, which then allowed me to add the 10th one. And that is your dragon 11th holiday for the week. All right, folks, so there you have it. Another week of Rossafari Zoo News is in the books. I'd like to say thank you to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, and Barbara Bennett. I'd also like to say thank you to everyone who sent in stories this week, including Anya Keene, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley Croninger, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Dr. Laura Shank, Marianne Rossi, that's my mom, y'all, Kay Malensky, Ali Malensky, the Malenskys, Sam Evans, Ken Tryon, Emily Rockbuck, Amanda Morrill, Elizabeth Dunleavy, Melissa Reed, and Karen Musklow. And remember, friends, the words Newsy Credits backwards are Steiderkiuswen.
The Rossafari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
If a teenager with a full beard and a few wisps, gosh, I was doing so well.